Welcome to the May the Smoke Be With You podcast. And now here's your host, Joe Levitt.
Hello and welcome in to this episode of the May the Smoke Be With You podcast. Thanks for joining us once again. You know, sometimes out of tragedy, something really good can happen. In 2011, tornadoes struck Joplin, Missouri. It left a lot of people kind of wondering where their next hot meal might be coming from. So enter our next guest and a team of nine competitive barbecuers who said, we're not going to stand for it. We're going to make sure that these folks are taken care of. And thus, really, I think was born Operation Barbecue. And so today, I'm thrilled to have one of the co-founders. He's currently the CEO and a board member of Operation Barbecue. Please welcome in Stan Hayes. How you doing, Stan?
Joe, I'm doing great. It's we got some nice weather here in Missouri for about the last week, and I can't complain. It feels like spring's at least almost here.
Yeah, it is. I think we're still at the point where it's flirting with us. I can't quite believe that it's here, but I'm hopeful.
Well, my allergies are telling me it's here. It's coming.
Okay. Yeah. So Missouri, I guess, is like Tennessee. It can just be really lovely for those seasonal allergies.
Yes.
Nice. Well, hey, we talked a little bit about the birth of Operation Barbecue. We're going to talk a lot about it.
Yeah.
But to get a little bit of just kind of background on you, I can't imagine that 2011 is where you decided you liked barbecue. So talk to me a little bit about kind of where you started in your own barbecue journey, and then we'll kind of back into Operation Barbecue and all that.
Sure. So, for me, I was always a kid out there with, my dad or uncles or whoever that were out there grilling and barbecuing. And let's face it, back then we used, barbecue as a mixed term, because it wasn't really barbecue. It was always grilling that they were doing, right? But I told people I was probably 16, 17 years old, but before I figured out that, grilled chicken wasn't supposed to be charcoal black, because, you didn't really actually start basting it, 5 minutes onto the grill. You actually waited to the end. But, it was those steps throughout the years of just watching, family, friends and relatives, doing a lot of that outdoor cooking, and me wanting to, I was always that kid that was there, whether it was in the kitchen with the grandma while she was making something. Food was always, part of, those family gatherings and everything that we did. So I say, that's where the roots of it start, but I can remember when I bought my first home. And I went out and I had an old Brinkman bullet smoker, and I went out and bought a grill to put out on the back patio and all of that stuff. And I remember the first time I cooked, for a large group of people was actually a couple of days before my wedding. I had a bunch of friends coming in from out of town, and I said, hey, why don't you come over? I'm going to cook. Yeah, no pressure at all, right? So I'm cooking pork butts, I'm cooking ribs, I'm cooking, chicken, I'm doing all of these things to put together a spread, and it turned out. But, I definitely learned my lesson on that. Years later, I graduated to a better smoker than the old Brinkman bullet, which had its challenges in and of itself as a cooker. And then, went to a little vertical offset New Braunfels smoker, and just kept going my wife is actually the one who, for my birthday, I was now living in Texas. I had bought my first smoker. I was doing a lot of stuff with friends, family. I was doing, people were having me smoke stuff for them. And she came home, one day and handed me my birthday card, and I opened it up and it said, hey, I'm going to, there's a barbecue contest at the VFW a mile down the road, and I'm going to enter you in it. I'm like, oh, hold on.
Take it easy.
We're down in Texas here, and you think my smoker's big, but it's not big enough to do what you have to do for a whole competition like this. I said, why don't we go to that competition so you could see it? And yeah, you know, sure enough, we get there and my wife looks and goes, man, yeah, you'd get beat up with that little smoker thing that you have with all the 500 gallon propane tanks.
Beat up and laughed out of the competition. Yeah,
absolutely. But that was sort of the beginning of me starting to research, you know, the competition stuff. And I was living in Texas. And shortly after that, I got relocated up to Kansas City about, you know, 6-7 months later, you know, after she gave me this. And, you know, the Barbecue Brethren, you know, at the time, that was really the source, you know, or one of the biggest sources out there. Know, you had the forum. And so I was on the Barbecue Brethren forum, had met a lot of competition guys, met just a lot of great backyard folks as well. And, you know, coming to Kansas City, when I said I was moving, you know, I had several of them that I'd known said, hey, yeah, we'll have to get together, yada, yada, yada. And that's what we did. You know, we just, you know, we got together and I started learning more about the competition KCBS style versus Texas style. Right. And I was like, you know what, this is something that I might be able to get into. And it was probably 6 months into living here. I went to my first barbecue contest, might've slept 3 hours at the most. You know, I was the pit helper, you know, back then, where I was staying up all night, checking on the fire, checking everything based in. And, I remember calling my wife after the contest, and we had done pretty well, the team that I was helping out. And I said, man, this was the most fun. And yeah, I was going through it. She said, oh, that's great. I'll see you when I get home. And I was like, no, you have to talk to me. You know, this hour and 20 minute drive home, hour and a half drive home, you've got to talk to me so I don't fall asleep. I mean, yeah. You know, and she's like, I'm like, I'm down here in the Ozarks. I'm coming back from Warsaw, Missouri, you know? And I'm like, if I go off the road, I'm going to hit a tree that's 2 foot in diameter. I'm going to, you know, I'm done. And yep. I said, she talked to me all the way till a point I could stop and get a large, you know, cup of tea and had more highway than these 2-lane roads I was going down. And she was like, I can't believe you think this is great. And I was like, oh, it's so much fun. I was really hooked at that point. And I was hooked, you know, because it, the competition's great, but the people were even better. You know, yeah. The people that I was meeting, you know, were just amazing. And, you know, they've all become barbecue family to me today. And a lot of those people that I met back then were people that were with us in Joplin, you know, that came to Joplin after that happened, as we were mobilizing. You know, it happened to be an off weekend, or off week in, that the disaster happened. People were coming back from competitions. It was coming up. It was going to be Memorial Weekend was the next weekend. So there wasn't, you know, a major competition in the Kansas City area. And right. So it was really a perfect timing to say, who better than a bunch of competition barbecue guys to go set up in a parking lot and just cook for people than us, right? I mean, we do it with minimal needs. And, you know, that's sort of the genesis of how it started. You know, I got with that guy who was my mentor in barbecue. And I said, hey, Jeff, what do you think? And it just fast forwarded. I mean, we have a 15-minute phone call driving to work the morning after the Joplin tornado turned into a plan of how we would mobilize and how we would go help the community. Yeah. And it ended up turning into Operation Barbecue Relief. And since then, there we thought we'd be there for 3, 4, maybe 5 days, go into the weekend, to the weekend, serve, you know, maybe 1,000 meals a day, you know, 5,000 for the week. You know, we cooked everything that they get, you know, we got with Sam's Club, and that was back when the Sam's Club barbecue championship was still going on and everything. Right. So yeah, it was actually really in the heart of it. And, you know, they said, yeah, you know, we'll donate, you know, basically enough pork for 1,000 pounds of pork. So enough for about, you know, 4,000 roughly, you know. And we said, okay, that'll get us started. And this may take, but so we had enough people there that we decided let's cook everything that we can load, you know, on the first day. And, you know, if we need to, we've got a big reefer truck, here, we'll just cool it down and reheat so it can be a little faster, because we know, you know, barbecue is not a fast sport. It's not a fast thing. Right. Yeah. So we cooked everything the first day and it was gone by evening time. You know, about 4,000 meals out the door.
You did in one day what you thought you might do in a whole week.
Yeah. And what ends up, you know, 11 days of cooking in Joplin was approximately 120,000 meals from that parking lot. We had cookers showing up from, you know, 9 different states. We had, you know, a major poultry company that came and said, hey, could you use some, we have pre-cooked chicken, fajita meat, we have, you know, wings, we have all of this stuff. Would you, you know, and they
yes
had a big, yeah, they had a big 1,000-gallon, you know, tank, you know, propane tank that they, that, you know, type smoker, and they fired that thing up, and we were using that while we were cooking, and we were going to Sam's Club every day, and they were just looking at, all right, these things are within 2 days of, you know, and just pulling it off the shelf and giving it to us. They're like, nice. Okay, we've got an abundance of sausage. Here you go. We've got we got a bunch of pork loins here. Here you go. And I literally, you know, would be, you know, I started out with a, you know, just a sedan car that I had, that I drove down there, you know, with, you know, loading up the back seats and the, you know, the trunk, to then going, all right, next time we go, we got to take a truck. My little four seat, you know, four door car was about, you know, dragging aground on the way back here. There was so much in it. But it was amazing to see how the community reacted, how the barbecue community reacted in coming out to it. I mean, so mm-hmm. many people that I had no idea who they were, we had never met before, maybe not even interacted before with, you know, coming from states. And, you know, I mean, we had a big group from Texas that came up that are good friends to this day, you know, and almost, you know, everybody that's there, that was there, became, you know, whether they stayed, you know, involved in the organization, they continue to be supporters in the organization, even if the life has changed to where they can't, you know, always deploy. But it was about day three. We were sitting around, you know, late in the evening, and we all looked at, you know, we were all talking about it going, you know, we found, you know, a gap that exists when these major disasters happen.
Yeah. Way to, yep.
It's one thing to have nutrition or sustenance for people. It's another thing to have, you know, quintessential comfort food like barbecue being handed out. And that's mm-hmm. the difference is, one, it's all fresh. I mean, even today we very rarely cool things down to reheat. It's not really good with our model, and everything. And food safety wise, you know, I'd rather cook fresh every day and not have to worry about, you know, did it get cooled down correctly? Did we get it to cool down? Did we have an issue with the reefer? You know, all of these different things. And, today,
and reefer for those keeping score at home isn't marijuana. It's a refrigerator truck, right?
Yes, absolutely. And, just
making sure we all know what we're talking about.
Yeah. Absolutely. And when we looked at it, and we said, hey, when we leave here, we're going to make this, and, you know, we're going to file paperwork and make it into a nonprofit. And so we were all sitting there. And so the week after we got back from Joplin, we were there for 11 days, 120,000 meals from that parking lot. For anybody listening that was there, it doesn't remember, we were at the corner of 7th and Range Line. I'll never forget it. Today it's a much different place, but I mean, we're sitting in a parking lot with Ryan's Steakhouse, right? It's not there anymore. It's another business of that, you know, today, but you know, that was the beginning. And there's so many, you know, tenants that came out of that parking lot in Joplin that we still use today. I mean, the one thing, you know, we had, one day we had some people walk up and went to the Ryan's Steakhouse, you know, tried to open the door to go in for dinner, to then read the note that said they were closed, to then walk across the parking lot and get into our food service line. And I had all kinds of people. They were losing their minds. They were like, oh, you know, look at these people. And I was like, guys, you don't know the circumstance. We have no idea. Yeah. They might have been, for the last 3 days, been sitting there digging through the rubble in their homes to then go back wherever they were, you know, take a shower and dress up and decide they wanted to go out for a meal. And, you know, to them, that meal was going to Ryan's Steakhouse. That's what they probably could afford, or that was what they thought they could get. And then they couldn't even get that. So then they came to our line. it's not for us to judge, when somebody comes through. And I've had people do it from, the last big one was during COVID. And we had this guy just got on this bandwagon of, I saw that guy in like Chrysler 300 in that parking lot, getting all those meals from you guys. Like he needed that with, you could see. And I was like, you're right. He didn't need it. He was also the mayor of that community, and he was picking up meals for all the firehouses and police stations to make sure his guys were being fed, and that's part of what we do. So again, I tell people, if you're really religious, you got to be right with God, right? At the end. And if you're that person that came into that line that didn't need that meal and you took it from somebody that maybe did need it, you're going to answer for that. Or you can take sort of my approach is karma's a bitch. And it is what it is. I mean, I'm there to make sure everybody gets it if they come over there. Because the other thing is it's also quite humbling to go get into a food service line. To go get a free meal is a pretty humbling experience to go out there and do that. So if somebody's going out and doing that, and it just tells me that they needed it, or they're a special kind of person, and they'll deal with that, later on in life.
Today's episode is sponsored by Tent Craft. Hey, attention barbecue comp teams, barbecue brands, and business owners of all kinds. If you take your show on the road, you need to make sure you are repping your brand with the best custom tent in the game. The folks at Tent Craft make their tents from the frame to the canopy, all in Traverse City, Michigan. This veteran-owned small business works with small brands like Little Ol' Me, all the way up to the big boy brands that you know and recognize. Listen, their tents will not be the cheapest, but they will be the best, and they back it with amazing customer service. The team at Tent Craft still believes in delivering a great product at a fair price and making it all from start to finish with American labor. If you want to see what the folks at Tent Craft can do to make your custom tent dreams come true, then reach out to them to get a free quote just like I did. Mention May the Smoke Be With You and get 15% off your custom tent. That's a great deal. Again, mention May the Smoke Be With You if you reach out to get your free quote, and you will get 15% off your custom tent. Go to tentcraft.com today to get started. So you were in, kind of backtracking a little bit. Where were you when you talked about growing up and cooking with your dad? Like where was home for you?
So home was Central Kansas. I grew up in a little town in Central Kansas.
And then Missouri. Gotcha. And then you moved to Texas, came back to Kansas City area, I guess you said, with your wife. So, I mean, kind of some hotbeds of barbecue. So, and you were kind of cutting your teeth down there in Texas, kind of learning the craft, starting to get into it. So how long between that kind of first competition until 2011, like how much?
That would have probably been 2009 when I started.
Okay. So a couple years kind of.
Yeah. So a couple years, because in 2011, I was launching my own barbecue team. I was, finally, I worked with, my mentor and learning, and I, felt I was ready to go out on my own. Right. I was buying my own pit. I was buying my own
trailer.
Little
did you know you were launching a different kind of team.
Oh, absolutely. Today, people say, hey, are you going to compete again? And I was like, I never say never to any of those questions, right? But what I do say is I'm so busy with this, and I get to see the people, and I get to see the smiles on people's faces that give me just as much joy as hearing my name called, at the end of a bar, the last name called at a barbecue competition is generally what you want. But it's really Joplin, had this effect on me that I really, at that point, I realized what I thought was important in life was really not the most important thing. You can talk to all of my friends. Nothing ever came out of my mouth growing up about me wanting to run, run a nonprofit,
What were you doing before all this happened?
So I was in insurance for almost 24 years before I left that 5 years, almost 6 years ago to work here full time. But I was on the corporate side of insurance. I started in claims and then worked myself up and then, you know, moved over to the marketing side, field distribution side, sales side. And I loved it. A lot of the leadership skills and things are things that I learned there are from many mentors that I had in the corporate world. And I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't, I think, for that background that I had there, because I learned a lot about business. I learned a lot about leadership. I learned a lot about, you know, building high performing teams and things like that. I go back there and I look at that, and I still have a lot of great friends there. And actually my company, you know, back then, is still one of our probably top 5 to 7 sponsors that we have today.
Oh, that's cool. And I think coming out of insurance, you know, it's, there's some similarities in that you were compensated based on your performance. You know, you would sell, you would make money, you sell more, you make more money. It's a great profession, make good money, but you have to sell. And I think, you know, going into the nonprofit sector, there's some similarities in that you have to be effective. You have to get out there. You have to shake those trees and get those sponsors or you guys will shut down. So, I mean, it's, did learn some of those things.
Oh yeah. You know, I'll never forget the day I was talking to an agent and, you know, about his business, and he said, "Stan, it's all about, you know, how many no's I need to hear to get to the
before
yes.
Before I get the yes." Yeah.
And, you know, he goes, "You know, my business, you know, I need about, you know, out of 10 people, if I can talk to 10 people, I'm going to get about 7 no's. And we get about 3 yeses. Yeah, I'll talk to you about my insurance needs. Mm-hmm. And I might sell one of those. If I can sell one household out of 10, I was like, you know, I was like, man, that's a horrible, you know, it's a horrible batting average when you think of it.
Yeah, those aren't Hall of Fame numbers.
Yeah. But when you think of it from the business perspective, you know, that's actually, you know, 1 out of 10, you know, you're doing your job. You know, you're making those phone calls, you're dialing for dollars. And, I learned a lot about, you know, business in that, you know, running a small business and helping, you know, helping people run a small business and how to be, you know, some of the best salesmen that I know are horrible businessmen.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so those guys, I'd be working with them, you know, saying, "Hey, you've got to find, you know, somebody that's good at administration. You got to find somebody that's good at what you're not good at, because you're a great salesperson, but you know, you can't live on that alone." And so those principles and that background, you know, and I grew up in a very small town in central Kansas, a very tight knit community. And so when something would happen, you helped out your neighbor. I mean, literally helped your neighbor out. And, you know, I look back on it now, and those things that, you know, were part of my upbringing, I believe, you know, are what helped shape, you know, who I am today. I went to a little liberal arts college, you know, and there was a lot of that college, you know, I go back there often now, not as often as I'd like, but, you know, and do events with them and help them out, because that's what you do. I think that's how we've evolved with the organization. You know, we've evolved past just disaster relief, you know, with the organization. We've been in 35 states now, plus the Bahamas, one international deployment to the Bahamas, over 11 million meals provided, you know, had another disaster, you know, in the panhandle of Texas with all, you know, the
wildfires this week,
the wildfires. Yeah. And, you know, there, we used our restaurant relief, you know, program that we used started during COVID. And instead of us spending the time to get resources there and the money to get everything there, you know, we got hooked in with a barbecue restaurant and several food trucks down there. And instead of doing that, why don't we help prop up a community by, you know, working with them, giving them, you know, the funds to make the meals so they can continue their business and be part of the solution in feeding the community in need. And, you know, we did.
Hiring subcontractors in a way and giving them some business, helping them get through this crisis. And then obviously they're feeding their communities. That's great. So 2011, you started 2 weeks later or a week later, you were like, hey, we're going to file that paperwork. So it was filed, I guess, in 2011, 2012. And then it sounds like you came to work full time in 2018. Is that what it was? Or 2017?
Yeah. July of 2018. I had an opportunity to walk away from my corporate job and start running this full time as the first full time employee.
Number one.
So I tell everybody it's a tale of two organizations. You have this organization that was ran, you know, from 2011 to mid 2018 by a group of volunteers. Mm-hmm. You know, ran by committee, so to speak, if you will, a working board and everything, but had grown to the point that we needed, you know, full-time leadership. We needed to look at the growth and, look at our sustainability of the organization. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I took the leap of faith and did that. My first person that I hired was not a barbecue guy, was not involved in that because I hired a guy who was a retired Green Beret or retiring. He hadn't even retired yet when I made him the job offer. He was retiring from the Army. He had been a Green Beret for almost 23 years. But he was very passionate about, first responders, veterans, active military, and giving back to those heroes that are always out there, you know, in their community. And we had started, in 2016, 2017, somewhere around there, we started doing what I called Day of Giving, where we would give back to a community. And I've told people I did it very selfishly. We were slow at the time and we didn't have a lot of disasters going on. And we had spent a lot of time training people, training volunteers, engaging volunteers. And so the best way I thought to engage was like, hey, what if I gave you a few $100s? What would you go do in your community? Mm-hmm. As I started talking to them, and about 8 out of 10 times it was I would do something for the first responders or active military in my community or the veterans. And we didn't promote it. We didn't talk about it. We didn't take a bunch of pictures like we do today and say, hey, that we're doing this. I did it, as I said, I did it selfishly to keep those people from walking away. I did it so they didn't leave the organization and go find somebody else because we were slow. Now, in hindsight, I should have done both, hiring Jay was the first step in solidifying those as true programs, not just what we do on blue sky days, right? Or when it's slow, but how we can continue to give back to our first responders, those active and military, active military members or our veterans and their families. 2019, we had a whole year of, doing some events like that where we were basically we called it Barbecue Basic. Now it's called Barbecue Academy and it's all about us, giving life skills to the first responders, the veterans, active military through grilling and barbecue, giving them skills, but also brand awareness if we ever had to come back to their community. Yeah. So they knew who we were. So we had, some connection there with them. And as we continue to grow that, and as we continue to do these things, it continued to grow and that continued to grow in 2019. In 2020, we had 25 events on the books around the country, from VA hospitals to corporate, corporations that wanted us to do this to support their first responders. And we got three in. We did two in California before the pandemic broke out. We did we did one with the Veterans Village of San Diego, which was one of the most awesome events that we had done at that point. And then we did a couple weeks later, we did Los Angeles Fire versus Los Angeles Police Department.
Nice.
And again, we try to use our background in competition, right, to bring that friendly competition together. And absolutely. So we've got to do that over the years. But we really started looking at it. How do we do this differently? We can only get like 25 events in a year, and they're like 2-day events at best. And you're traveling people all over the country, trucks and trailers, and had an opportunity to think about it differently. And I presented the idea of a destination location. What if we could build a camp? Or when I started, it was a campground. Now today, it's a full blown camp. But we'll be opening Camp OBR officially. I mean, we've been doing camps this last year for veteran groups. We've done some veteran hunts. We had a Gold Star men's retreat, and we've already got 4 camps on the books for next year.
That's great.
On the calendar. But starting in July, it'll be officially open, and we will start bringing out, and we'll expand it to more family friendly, because as we started doing these, and the more we started meeting people and more we started learning, there are so many organizations that are doing great work for our nation's heroes. But so many times they leave the family out while they're doing that great work. And what we want to do is, somebody a while back asked, so why, tell me why you're doing it this way. Why are you doing families? I said, at the end of the day, aren't we all trying to decrease, veteran and first responder suicide, decrease the codependency rate, the alcoholism and drug addiction rates out there? Well, the fastest way I can think of doing that is to keep a family from divorcing. If I can help keep a family together that's struggling from either the physical or emotional injury of the service member, I've already got a better chance than just working with the service member themselves. And then you start thinking about it. If I start giving them life lessons around how to grill and barbecue and give, and we're going to expand, it's not going to be just grilling and barbecue. We'll do flat top. We'll do outdoor. Yeah. It's going to be outdoor cooking. It's going to be live fire cooking. There's going to be, pizza ovens, all the different things that you can do. Right. But food is the greatest unifier in the world. It brings more people together.
Back to family. You teach them how to have a pizza night with a pizza oven, and then they go home and then they go, we should get a pizza oven, or we should just make it in our oven. And all of a sudden it becomes pizza night, and you've given them the tools to create these memories as a family. That's amazing.
And when they can't figure out what they need to do to, they feel themselves continuing to, or that the divide is there still, or they don't know how to communicate with one another, they can go get some stuff for the grill. I told somebody, I said, I think it's just, I take for granted, my kids started cooking when they were 5 years old. They started competing in kids competitions at 5.
Yeah.
I had them holding a paring knife and doing things. And I watched my wife every time I would do it, she would get mad. And I said, but what's the worst thing that's going to happen?
They're going to
cut themselves.
Caught. Yeah.
It's not life threatening. They'll learn from it. And I said, when we started looking at the curriculum, and I said, you know what? The kids are the linchpin in all of this.
Yeah.
Because if I get the kids there and I hand that, 6-year-old or 8-year-old or whoever, that knife, that little paring knife, and I hand them some vegetables to cut, and I show them how to hold it, and I show them how to cut it. One thing we know for certain, because I watch my wife do it, is that mom and dad are going to be there coaching. To try to make sure they don't cut themselves, try to make sure that they're doing it. And it might be the first time in months, year, that they've seen mom and dad, communicating cohesively together in the same way with them, they're super important right now and everything. They don't understand that they're doing it because they're concerned that they may hurt themselves. They just see that coming together piece, right? And if we can then continue to use that when they leave there, now it gives them the building blocks. It gives them the way that they can at least continue to come together, breaking bread, sitting around the dinner table together. And that's what we need more of, in my opinion. And as we continue to grow, we'll continue to do more. But I mean, we have, like I said, we have 4 camps already on the books. And they're not all family camps. we have quite a few Gold Star camps that'll probably be on the books this year. You know, looking at, you know, I think one of them, we're going to look at young adults, you know, 18 to 25 that have lost a sibling or lost a parent from their line of service. Yeah. And, you know, I have a guy who is, he's actually at the camp today, who was part of our Gold Star men's retreat last year, who was in a bad place. I mean, he told me, and he didn't realize how much, you know, coming to a camp like that with no real pressure, but just, you know, food, grilling, some service project, would make a difference in his life. He brought a bunch of beekeeping equipment up. We started beehives last year because we want that to be one of the things that people that want it, that may be interested in it, so they can experience it, you know, and get in the suit, they can get out there, they can see the honey, they can see the hives. Well, Vic came out and brought, you know, more hives and brought more stuff and donated a bunch of stuff and drove it up from Alabama. Yeah. For it. But you know, it's extremely humbling when you hear somebody tell you, you know, I was in a bad place, you know, and he told me this next month will be 8 years. I think it is since he lost his daughter, you know, and he's like, you know, I've heard all sides of it. I've seen the man break down, but you know, he's excited today, you know, he's like, look, I didn't know what I was going to get out of this camp. I certainly didn't expect this, but he's found a broader family as well. He, you know, besides the other men that were there that had lost someone,
right?
He's also become a volunteer for us, did his first disaster down in Florida after Hurricane Idalia, and has now volunteered for some local events. Wow. And, you know, he started that just from I don't know what I'm going to get out of this, but you know, things need to change. And, you know, to me, you know, maybe we look at outcomes too often when we look at programs, maybe we got to take a step back. And I know that's what foundations and people that are giving money want. And, you know, but I think I've proven that I'm not quite probably the traditional nonprofit leader in thinking of how we can do things differently. How can we help people and do it differently? And that's really what we do in disaster and what we're working on outside of disaster. Not that we're not going to continue to go places and put on these classes in the field. You know, we're just not going to try to schedule 25 of them in a year and kill somebody to drive around the country, you know, truck a trailer around the country. You know, we want to bring people together and, you know, 5 days down on Lake of the Ozarks. I mean, it's 190, Camp OBR is 190 acres.
Yeah. That's the thing. I wanted people to kind of get a little bit of an idea because, you know, if I follow you guys on social. And so I see this thing coming to life. You know, David Olson is a buddy of mine. And so I know he had a group of guys and gals that came down there and they did some amazing cooks. The views are unbelievable. The spot you have is great. So give people kind of that picture of this, because it's not just a campground by any stretch.
It's you know, it's 190 acres. We have about 1500 feet of lake frontage on the property. And it is a little slice of solitude. I mean, you know, there is not much for cell phone service at all out there. You know, FaceTime is your friend or Wi-Fi calling if you're going to have anything, because we do have fiber internet of all things down there. We have blazing fast speed,
which really means there has to be somebody there that's like a Charter or Comcast or fill in the blank, like executive that has a home there on Lake of the Ozarks. And they're like, we're getting fiber out here.
For sure. Well, and then this last, you know, since 2020, the push to, you know, for connectivity for everybody across the country has really helped drive that as well. But, you know, for us, you know, now we have a place to, you know, we're going to take a 20-year-old tack barn and turn it into a culinary education center. When it's said and done, we'll have the ability to stream classes from there. We'll have the ability to hold high-end fundraising events there.
How many people will it sleep at any one time?
So we're going to, you know, six to eight families is what we think is the perfect number. And the reason it's a floating number a little bit is, you know, we don't want a family to be, feel like they can't come because our rooms are a queen bed and a bunk bed set. Mm-hmm. So we built duplexes with an adjoining door. So, you know, you have a family of six that wants to come, you know, we'll be able to accommodate them because we would give them both sides. Yeah. Of the duplex.
Well, thanks for the invite. How did you know we had six? That's very kind of you. Thank you, Stan.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and when you look at it, and we'll do some more events, like the event that we did with David Olson was a great awareness type thing, you know, because mm-hmm. you saw the views and people started saying, what's Camp OBR? What's that? You know, and I would tell anybody that wants to look, you know, go to OBR.org and just underneath our programs, you know, find Camp OBR. You can actually go to campobr.org and it'll redirect you to that page. But, you know, you'll see some of the videos there, but there's also a link to more videos of what we do. There's, you know, news, there's all kinds of stuff about the organization out there. In fact, it's probably a little bit overwhelming if you go to the website, truthfully. But, you know, for us, it is, you know, how do we continue to give back during blue sky days, because we know there's more blue sky days every year than gray sky days. Mm. You know, some of our worst disaster years where we've served millions of meals in a year, you know, you're talking 120 days, 125 days of active, you know, at a disaster. And yeah, you got to clean stuff up. You got to fix stuff. You got to do, but how can we continue to use our skills, use what we do to make impacts in communities? And that's why we're starting with those heroes and serving those heroes that serve us. Yeah. You know, we want to be known for, you know, not just our disaster work. And let's face it, there's so many more blue sky days. So let's continue to use our skills. Let's continue to do better. And, you know, my goal is in, you know, in the next 5 years, what we do outside of disaster becomes talked about just as much, if not more, than what we do during disaster.
Yeah.
Because we're dependent, you know, as an organization, we're dependent on disasters and truthfully, that's a really bad model, you know, because I'm not going to sit here and beg for or wish for or pray for disasters. Right.
No.
I mean, that's not, you know, you don't do that. And it's very reactionary, right? You know, when a disaster happens, we're dropping everything that, you know, stuff with our family, stuff with, you know, with the kids. I mean, and my kids know what I do, and they know that I've missed their share of, you know, dance recitals and games and events in their life. And
yeah, that was,
you
know, one of the things I was kind of wondering about a little bit, was that work-life balance for you, because your job is so unique. You know, you have mm-hmm. your family, and that's, you know, you're called to take care of your home, your roof, your wife, your kids. Like that's mm-hmm. your role. But then you have a unique role for what you do for a living, which is to respond and in essence, take care of a lot of other people. So
yeah,
what does that look like for your family?
So today it's much better than it used to be. I mean, but that's because of the amazing team that I've built that's behind me, you know, that does the work that, you know, is out there every day. You know, I still go to the events, but you know, I may not be the first person in, or I may hold back a week because I have an organization now that depends on me to run it, you know, full time. But, you know, I also have, you know, I have a daughter that's graduating from high school this year. My son graduated 2 years ago. So the last several years I've tried to be more present, you know, for the family and mm-hmm. for those events. You know, I mean, I went to my last high school cheerleading event last night, you know, for a cheer banquet, you know, and, you know, as much as I'm happy it's over, there's a little sadness to it.
Sure.
You know,
yeah,
you know, she's going to be, she's going to graduate. She's going to go to college and you know, I'll have something else to be proud of her about, you know, as it goes. And, you know, my son last night, unfortunately, you know, couldn't be at two places at the same time, but he was sworn in as a pipe fitter last night. He went through and did his oath and everything as a first year pipe fitter, and at 20 years old, getting into a trade, because he realized, I don't want to go to college. I don't want to go spend that money for something that I don't know what I want to do. And he loves working with his hands. He loves, he's got an engineering mind, but you know, without the ability to go through the classes and not want to poke his eyes out. He was one of those kids that COVID did not help, you know, not having school for a year and a half, essentially in a classroom and teachers not their fault, but you know, they became more administrators. They became more, do assignments on Google Classroom. You weren't really meeting with the kids. They may, you know, they may meet for 15 minutes and then it's like, go do your homework, you know?
Yeah.
And so it became hard, you know. I don't know that kids today are prepared the way, you know, I don't think she at 18 or my son at 20 are ready for anything compared to what I was at that age. I mean, I was 19, 20 years old driving to Colorado with my friends, going skiing and stuff like that. I'd be scared to death if my daughter said, "Hey, I'm going to drive to Colorado."
No, you're not.
So I don't even like going downtown Kansas City.
Yeah, which might be more dangerous than a mountain in Colorado. So when something happens, you know, the most recent example, wildfires in Colorado, you know, what's that kind of, there has to be kind of almost a decision tree, some things that, that make
it
where you guys say, yep, we're deploying and we're going. Like what makes a deployment happen? Like what needs to kind of, I guess, be true or.
So
you can't go everywhere.
No, we can't go everywhere. And the last thing we want to do is insert ourselves in a community when we're not needed. Right. Mm-hmm. So let's say we'll use tornadoes, you know, wildfires are very tricky. And so are floods because they can, you know, they happen, people get evacuated and just as fast as they're evacuated, they may be called to be able to go back home. Right. So that's what's tricky, but you take a tornado that hits a rural community out there. You know, why am I going to go insert myself if the churches and civic groups have stood up
and they're taking care of everybody
and they're taking care of everybody? Because that's when the true healing begins in a community, is when the community starts taking care of itself, not when a bunch of outside organizations come in to help them. So when they can take over and push those people out so they can have that normalcy and get back to it, that's what you want. So there's times that we've said, you know, where we've been chastised for not going and we're like, but the tornado, as bad as it was, and it did hit homes, you know, but the whole commercial area is still open. All the churches have opened their doors. They're doing what they should be doing. Really, we're a stopgap when none of those things can't happen. Now, we know that if there is an EF5 tornado that hits somewhere, you know, we're probably going if it's any kind of a major metropolitan area.
Right.
We know if it's a Cat 5 hurricane that's barreling down along any of the coastal areas, we're probably going. At what level we're going to be needed, you know, we don't know. But we don't generally wait for the county, the city, the state to say, hey, we want you to come in. Because by the time they do that, it could be 10 days after the disaster happens because they're so busy with everything else. Right? Sure. So we've started growing that network across the country. We have a, you know, our senior head of operations, who's over all of those, you know, him and, one of the other, leaders will start tracking it. They'll start getting information and they'll give us a recommendation. Hey, I think we need to do this. I mean, it's just like Texas was like, hey, you know, for us to get equipment down there, we don't have much for equipment, you know, in Dallas, you know, so for us to get stuff to the panhandle, it's going to be two and a half days before we can get it turned, get it there. And, you know, by the time we do that, we're going to spend a lot of money. Now, it's not always about spending the money, but it's also about spending the money, you know, wisely. And when we start looking at it, and we've done this now since COVID, and looking at these alternative ways to put meals out, why not go and partner with a local restaurant, a local food truck, somebody that's business is greatly affected during this time, and give them a lifeline, but also let them show their community that they're a socially responsible, you know, company in their community, because they're partnering with us and they're helping put out these meals. Yeah. You know, I had one person, you know, one employee on the ground there, and he was just helping coordinate things and making sure that, you know, people were being, you know, we were keeping people up to date. And, you know, we have several sponsors that have, you know, whether it's Prairie Fresh, you know, pork producer who has plants in that area, or Phillips 66, who also has refineries in that area. You know, we want to be able to tell them what we're doing. You know, you know, they support us, so we want to be able to tell them what we're doing to support them and their communities.
You know, you guys have been, you know, from the tornadoes to the wildfires, there's been, you know, hundreds of deployments, you know, between 2011 and now. You said 11 million meals have been served. What's one story that you just can't shake out of your head? That's like, man, that interaction, that thing.
Oh, it's easy. It's easy. Okay. It's that first, you know, it was the second or third day in Joplin. Mm-hmm. And, I watched an old like Cutlass, you know, come driving into the parking lot, just beat to hell. I mean, limbs had hit it, glass cracked and everything. And, all I saw was stuff piled all the way to the ceiling. And I watched this little older lady get out of the car and start walking over, and she sort of just stopped, you know. And I was watching her do this, so I thought, hey, I better go check on her, see if I can help her. And I walked over there, and she looked at me and she said, well, I was told I could come here and get some food. You know, I lost pretty much everything, and I'm trying to work to go, I'm going to go stay with my son or something like that. But, you know, I haven't had a hot meal in a couple of days, and I was told I could come here and get one. I was like, yes, ma'am. You know, so I directed her to the line and everything. And, you know, she went through the line, and I was off doing something else. And I looked back, and she's sitting there holding, you know, a to-go container. And at this point, she's got tears just streaming down her face. And I'm like, oh my God, what happened? You know, and, so I walk over there, and I was like, can I help you? Are you okay? You know, is something wrong? And she looked at me and she goes, I just need to know who to thank. Mm. And I was like, huh? I need to know who to thank for this. Who thought enough to come, you know, help our community, to show us the love and bring this food to us? And I'm like, it's just a pulled pork sandwich. And she's like, no. She's like, this is love. This is true love. Mm. And so I tell people that story, you know, because one, it's one that hit me into the heart, right? Because I never thought of it that way. I didn't think, yeah. You know, I thought of it as a pulled pork sandwich. But that little old lady sat there and told me, you know, that's not what's important. It's important that you thought about us. It's important that we weren't forgotten, you know, and so when I have a bad day, or I don't think things are going right on a deployment, or I just have to think back to her and what she said, right? You know, it's about providing, you know, love to the community through what we do. You know, I mean, that pulled pork sandwich is so much more than a pulled pork sandwich. It signifies, you know, that the community's not forgotten by people after something major like this happens. And so, you know, that's the first story that I have.
Yeah.
That I can remember. And
that's a great story.
I've had many since then.
Yeah. And as I sit there and I see the shirt you have on, you know, there's a heart in your yep. logo. And it's what it's all centered around for you guys. I mean, it's around love, and it's around meeting people and just in one of the lowest points that they could possibly ever have. And you guys are, mm-hmm. you guys are there for it. It's amazing work, really is, that you guys are out there doing.
It's one of the most humbling things to be thanked, you know, for something that you take for granted, something like just cooking pork butts. Right. And somebody is so thankful for just that. It's still hard, you know. I've gotten better at it, but it's still hard to, you know, when somebody's going through potentially the worst time of their life.
Yeah.
to have them thanking you when you're like, no, we're just here to help you. We're here to do what we know how to do best. And that's just to provide, you know, a hot comfort meal for you. And that's really, I think, what it's about. You know, I think that's why I get so many volunteers to come out from communities, because it weighs on their heart as well to want to do something, but they don't know what to do. And they see, oh, there's this group doing this. I should go volunteer, because let's face it, we don't need you to have, you know, be a grand champion pit master. I mean, no, we need you
scoop beans, you know,
that's, you know, we need you to have a heart to give, you know, and want to work hard. You know, I tell people, I sat there, oh, what was that, 2016, in Hammond, Louisiana, after, you know, the devastating, they had like 36 inches of rain around Baton Rouge and that area, and like in less than a day, and the massive flooding that they had. And, you know, Brooke and Brad Orson had just won, you know, Memphis in May.
Yep.
You know, earlier that year. And I'll tell you what, I remember walking into the site, and Brad was there, and he's in a tilt skillet with like mixed vegetables or something that's like my kryptonite, you know, cooking those and stirring that tilt skillet and really getting after it. And I thought, if there was one person at this cook site that could sit there and say, you know, I should probably be the one cooking, you know, the pork today, it might have been Brad, because he had just won, you know, the world championship. But he didn't, you know, and no one has ever come in there and said, hey, you know what, you're not using me correctly.
Yeah.
You know, they come in and they give their heart, they give their soul, their blood, sweat, and tears, as I say it. And they do it because it's the right thing to do. You know, people check egos at the door. It's not like, hey, you know, I'm a world champion, I should be over there not doing this. That was never said. And I just, you know, I've seen that happen many times, you know, since then. And it's just very inspiring to see that people are coming out for the right reason, you know?
Yeah. And that has to do with the culture, I think, that you guys set from the beginning, that was nine competitive pit masters who are all coming together for a common good. Not all nine of them were able to probably cook their favorite thing or cook their best thing. But you guys, you know, from the, and it has to, and that's trickled down through you to the guys and gals that you're sending out to be the point of contact on some of these sites. I mean, yeah, it's, that's a testament to just what you guys built from the very beginning, without a doubt.
Yeah. I think that it's one of the most, you know, I think it, you know, I tell people, you really want to get lost in service, just go out there and hand out meals to somebody that hugs you and with tears in their eyes and thanks you for something that, you know, they may never be able to pay back to you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's life changing. So you guys are a 501c3,
correct,
and that means that you exist because people help you exist. You're a foundation that requires volunteers and donations of all kinds. So what are some ways, maybe if somebody's listening to this, maybe hearing about OBR for the first time, that they can get involved with you guys?
Yeah. So, you know, the first thing I tell everybody is, if you're an Apple user or whatever, Android, you can go to the App Store and download our app. It's OBR Volunteer, and you can go on there, you can download it, you can sit here and you can register as a volunteer from your phone. And as you register from your phone, you'll be able to complete everything, but you'll be able to turn on those push notifications. And if there's a disaster event where we're looking for volunteers, We've flown volunteers in Florida. We flew volunteers from like 28 different states to Florida. Okay. You know, as long as they would give us basically 5 days on the ground, a travel day in and a travel day home, and they'd give us five on the ground, we were bringing people from all over. The next thing is we need money. You know, for us to exist, we've got to be able to, continue to bring in donations. I mean, this organization was built on a lot of people giving what they could, you know, and it's grown because of the corporate side getting involved and seeing the good that we do, and it continues to grow. But with the camp, we're going to have a lot of new opportunities. You know, some people like to buy something that's needed. I mean, we're probably, I don't know if it's going to be, it didn't happen this week because of the disaster and everything, but I think next week we'll be starting Wishlist Wednesdays. And it's our Amazon wish list of the stuff that we're going to need in the cabins. You know, I mean, it's just little things. I started calculating how much liquid soap do you need for the shower, you know, for the showers, the shampoo, all of those things, for the dispensers. You know, how much do you have to get to be able just to fill them for the first time?
Yeah.
I mean, because you're going to have, you know, there's going to be 12 units, you know, there. That each have a shower, and then we have a shower or bathhouse that has two more showers. So you got 14 showers. So if you've got pumps for just that, I'm like, so soap, stupid things that go through my head.
It adds up. Yeah.
You know, and then so we'll have this whole wish list around that. But, you know, then we have a whole sponsorship packet around how people, like how companies can come in, how family foundations can support, whether it's the disaster side or the non-disaster programs that we have. I mean, there's that culinary education center that I'm talking about. I'm just waiting for somebody to want to put their brand over the top of that door that says, you know,
name it.
They're naming that. And each of the cabins right now, all we have, you know, I didn't even mention, we have six glamping cabins that we built a year ago that have air conditioning and heat. And that's what we've been using so far. They sleep, you know, between two and four people. They're little, you know, tough sheds basically that we personally built in our warehouse to be able to start doing things this year, or last year actually. But when we have all of those things and we, you know, we're going to be able to, I mean, we could, if you packed everything in there and it was every bed was occupied at maximum occupancy, you're over 50 people could be outside.
Yeah.
Now it's easy to hide with 50 people. That's why we want these camps to be, you know, around 20 to 25 people at these camps, because we want them to be able to interact. We want the kids to be kids and learn. We want the parents to, you know, build new relationships. We'll co-mingle camps. A lot of times you'll find that it's only, you know, military, or it's only this branch of the military, or it's, you know, this veteran group. We'll co-mingle first responders with active military, with veterans, because we know there's power in them knowing that there's
other stories and they can learn from each other. Absolutely.
That there's more people out there for that, right? Their network is much larger than what they think it is a lot of times. Yeah. And that's the easiest way to do it.
That's great. I saw on your website, you guys have a big fundraiser coming up in May. Still opportunities to get involved in that. And just briefly, if you want to tell people about that.
Yeah. So it's our annual Heroes Weekend, we call it. You know, Sunday night we're calling it Black Tie Barbecue, and it's, you know, it's the biggest oxymoron out there. You know, there's no black ties at this event. It's jeans and nice shirt. It'll be a really cool apron that looks like a tuxedo or looks like a gown that you'll get, you know, at the event. But it's really about, you know, hearing about what we're doing, not only in disaster, but outside of disaster. We'll have some local heroes come in to be part of it. But, you know, companies can buy tables, they can buy seats, individuals can buy seats. If you like to golf, the next day is our golf tournament. Cool. And our golf tournament is a golf tournament with a big twist. And that is that we actually put chefs on holes and they're cooking for the golfers on those holes throughout the whole day. So you come out there and, you know, at 9 o'clock, 9:30, when we tee off, there might be, you know, Chef John Rayleigh might be over there making his pizzas on the course, or, you know, we may have, you know, David Olson was out last year with, you know, hanging meat and, you know, with this live fire show, and it's all about, you know, food, you know, having a good time. There's going to be beverages there. And then if, you know, for those people that say, well, I'm not a golfer, that's great. Do you like to barbecue? Because we will have eight foursomes sitting in the parking lot with a professional pit master as their mentor, as they go through some cooking classes and then get to compete against one another at the end of that 5 hours. So we give the best of both worlds of, our grilling and barbecue lessons and class to just being present out on the course and telling our story. So it's continuing to grow. There are still spots available. I will tell you, usually we're usually full by the end of March, beginning of April, and we send it out to everybody that was there last year. They sort of get that they get noticed first up, yeah. And then we start pushing it out to everybody else. And we know that, you know, not every year everybody's going to be coming back, but we have a large number of them. And we'll get some celebrity athletes that'll come out and play, you know, some retired chiefs and some retired, you know, we have a retired World Series MVP that'll be back again this year. He's a Royals great and, you know, spent a lot of time in Kansas City and other ball teams later in his career. So
very fun.
It'll be a lot of fun.
Well, sounds like a great event. Well, we always kind of end our episodes with a little speed round. So we're going to kind of finish up here. May the Smoke Be With You obviously has a tip of the hat to Star Wars. So first question is, are you a Star Wars fan?
I am a Star Wars fan, not near what my wife or daughter are.
Okay.
I mean, I've seen every one of them. I've seen the last several that came out in theaters. I was there opening night.
Family drove you there. All right.
Family, I'm not a big movie goer. I'd rather wait till it gets on TV and stay home. But I've seen every release in the last, 10 years or so that we've been living here. And we've taken the kids with us. I mean, some of these getting home at 1 o'clock in the morning, they got to get up to school for a Friday. Cause for whatever reason, they launch on a Thursday.
Oh, they were
night,
doing
right?
like the midnight shows. Yeah. That kind of, I remember that. Do you have a favorite Star Wars movie out of all of them?
You know, I go back to the older ones
and
probably, it would probably be it'd probably be 4 or 5 just because it set the tone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because that was the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Before they really came back to 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
So I think it was setting that tone and I think there's a lot of parallels in life when you look at the family that grew out of this. Right. And the circumstances, for all of them. There's a lot that plays along in life today, I think, but it's,
Look at you getting deep on the Star Wars there.
Life
parallels and stuff.
We watch so many of them I've bought, that's my go-to stuff at Christmas time. If I don't know what I'm going to buy my wife, I find something unique for a Star Wars, right?
There you go.
Favorite
character? Do you have one?
I've always been, sort of that Han Solo,
like the swagger,
sort of the swagger, the renegade side of him.
I can see that. I like it.
That or Chewie, just want to tear something apart sometimes.
I can relate. If you're out there and you're cooking and maybe you're not on site, so maybe this is just like a weekend and you find yourself outside cooking. What do you have in your hand? What are you drinking?
What am I drinking? I'm probably drinking a light beer. Okay. It really depends on the time of year. There's some local, really refreshing, local beers. And I try to go as local as possible, but a lot of times it's just easy to go with a Miller Lite or, something like that. Yeah.
And what are you listening to?
I listen to a little bit of everything. Some people think it's really weird when I have a playlist that may throw out some Metallica right after you listen to, Chris Stapleton then may jump into, I'm not a big R&B or rap person. I do have some on there, for fun. I like some the old school, rock and almost all the country. I mean,
Okay, I can support that. Is there one thing that you haven't cooked yet?
Is there one thing that I haven't cooked
yet?
I've cooked so many that I want to cook.
And it might be, no, hey, there's nothing out there.
There's probably some exotic meats that you know, I'm not really thinking of anything like, yeah. You know, like, you know, ostrich or something like that I've eaten before, but I've never cooked.
Yeah.
But for the most part, no, I think, I mean, I've covered everything on a cow, you know, pig, you know, I've cooked some things that I never thought I would cook. You know, I've been, you know, fortunate enough to compete on Chopped and had some things in a basket that I never would have cooked.
For sure.
To this day, I still wouldn't have ever cooked, you know. So it was never on my list, but, you know, I got to cross things off like rattlesnake or offals. And, you know, if somebody would have told me when I was a kid, you're going to cook sweetbreads, I'd be like going, what kind of bread is that?
Right. Yeah. You know,
I had to ask somebody when they told me on the show, they said, we're cooking an offal. And I was like, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then I cut it open. I was like, oh, you're talking liver and heart and basically innards. Okay. I got you now.
Yeah. I don't think I knew that phrase either. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I didn't know the phrase. And then I was like, you know, I mean, I knew what it was after I cut it open, but I'm back at the room, you know, late at night after shooting, and I'm like looking up, you know, I can't even spell it right. I mean, like, oh, okay, yeah, I was right, but I never heard that term before.
Well, lastly, how can people find you guys and find you?
Yeah, so we're on all major social media, you know, all the platforms, you know, Operation Barbecue Relief or OPBBQ Relief is the short handle for it. OBR.org is the easiest way to find our website. You can donate from the website. You also can start your volunteer process from the website. I do know most people say it's much easier on the phone than the website.
Okay, good.
But I would tell you, you know, watch our social media, really. I mean, it tells the story of what we're doing and it shows how busy and how much, you know, we're involved. You know, I've got several events coming up, you know, this month I'm pretty much at home, but after this month I'm, you know, back-to-back weeks, a fundraiser in Charlotte, North Carolina, at the Carolina Barbecue Fest. So if you're going to be at the Carolina Barbecue Fest, come by and see me. I'd love to see people. We'll be at Pig Beach in Louisville. The following week, doing an event there, and then we're going to be doing a private event, fundraising event the next night. So Friday night we'll be there, and then we're going to do a very intimate, about 40 people. Get your checkbooks out, you know, bring a handkerchief. I'm going to try to make you all cry and write big checks type of event. And then really we've got a few other little things, and then we get into our weekend. Of May 19th and 20th for our big event here in Kansas City. And then I'll be up in the Pacific Northwest in June for an event. Right. And then really I'm from there, I've sort of cut it back because I'm planning on, you know, I'm bringing the entire, OBR team in at the end of June, for several days of, you know, team bonding, and because we're spread across 9 different states, maybe 10 different states. And so we'll bring the team in down to the camp. There's some that have seen it, some that haven't seen it yet. So they'll get to experience the camp, get to see all the different activities that we'll have there. And, you know, then the following month we'll start with, camps. And so, probably some of my schedule of events that I've done in the past and stuff will slow down. You know, for at least a few months, why I make sure that the camps are going and we're getting the storytelling from those camps of impacts to people.
That's great. Well, man, I really,
and then we know that disasters don't stop. So
no, that's true.
In between all of that,
they don't stop. Hopefully, at least through the summer, hopefully you'll be okay. But I guess it's tornado season then too. So, it doesn't stop. Well, this has been great. Thank you so much for joining the podcast, sharing your story. Loved hearing about just kind of the genesis of Camp OBR and just Operation Barbecue Relief in general. This has been great. Thanks again.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it.
May the smoke be with you.
Thanks for listening to the May the Smoke Be With You podcast with Joe Levitt.